Felger and Mass.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah?
So sporty.
Oh, yeah?
Sports and sports and sports.
Oh, yeah?
Sports in your face.
Oh, yeah?
Sports.
Felger and Mass.
Awesome.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. Felger and Maserati coming to you on a Wednesday. Fully loaded program. Maz in the Maz chair. Big Jim Murray in our update studio. Stuart and Lanny behind the glass. How you doing, Anthony?
Good, you?
Just peachy. Thank you. Want to start some baseball? How about we do baseball today?
Sure, I'm in.
Okay, baseball to open up the show. We got plenty of other stuff later on in the program. We'll get to the Celtics and where they stand as they return to the Garden tonight for a game. We've got more Rask follow-up. We got Paul Perillo and the Patriots stuff coming up at 4 o'clock. But let's start baseball, all right? So this is a place for you in the next hour if you want to bitch about Alex Cora not winning the Manager of the Year. It's a place for you if you want to hit on what some people are supposing, and that is the Red Sox and Bryce Harper in free agency. Not as crazy as it would sound on paper. We'll put that on the table. And then pace of play initiatives are going full steam ahead, apparently, this offseason in baseball. Jason Stark had an interesting column in The Athletic that we'll get to as well. So those things are for you this hour, because I can't guarantee you'll get much time on these things for the rest of the week. So now's your opportunity, Seamheads. 617-779-0985. Maz, are you offended that Alex Cora did not win Manager of the Year?
No, and I think anyone who is wasn't paying attention. I don't think Alex Cora had a leg to stand on in this Manager of the Year voting.
Didn't have a leg
and
to stand on?
That's,
a
little, that's a little strong. Let
thank
me
you.
Finish.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, it's a little strong. But we all know what the award is. We all know. The award is basically the most surprising team in the league. It's always been that for as long as I can remember. Effectively, the Manager of the Year award goes to the most surprising team in the league. The team that overachieved by the most during the regular season. The Red Sox had the highest payroll in baseball. Did Alex Cora's team, did anyone think that he was really going to win this thing when he was against Bob Melvin and Kevin Cash?
So you believe payroll should be held against you?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, usually payroll is an indicator of talent. And so now, if you want to tell me that there were some high payroll teams in history that had guys on the DL or they had swallowed contracts and that the payroll was artificially high and those teams are exceptions, fine. Yes. But as a general rule, not an absolute rule, a general rule, payroll should be held against you? Absolutely. No question. If you have more talent, you're expected to win. The Red Sox were picked to be a playoff team right out of the gate.
What did Oakland win? 96 games with what was essentially like a minor league roster?
Yeah.
And a ragtag roster? The right guy won. Melvin should have won it. Let me ask.
To me, honestly, I think Cash should have won.
I remember you saying that back in September, but let me put it to you another way, Mike. Are you upset that Craig Counsell didn't win it in the National League?
Who did?
The guy with the Braves, Snicker.
Snicker, yeah.
All right, so I could give two little rat poops about these awards. I could care less. Even my teams, right, that I do feel a fan inclination towards, and the Brewers are one of them. I could care less that Council didn't win it. If Yelich doesn't win the MVP, I'm not going to lose a wink of sleep, you know, but there's some fans that they do care.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm just not one of them. I just don't care about those individual things whatsoever. I couldn't tell you. How do you know? How do you know what Snicker, I don't even know who that is.
Snicker
there did. In Atlanta, I have no idea.
Well, they were a surprise team at the beginning of the year. Did anyone think the Braves were making the playoffs?
I mean, but beyond that, like, how did he manage his bullpen? Did he have internal turmoil that he had to overcome? Were there, you know, lineup issues, injury issues? I don't know. Maybe he did a better job than Council. Maybe he didn't. I like Council. He did a good job. That's all I care about, whether he won or not. And so I would say that if I were a Red Sox fan, I'd feel the same way about Cora. What does it?
It doesn't.
He did a great job, and I feel good about him in the manager's office, and there we go. So,
but because of the win total and the fact that they capped it off the World Series, I think a lot of fans getting a little bit greedy here because they want all the accolades. Oh my God, we won that many games, and Alex Cora is not going to be Manager of the Year. Rubble.
So, if you care, I mean, I get it, and I think the award is misappropriated or whatever. Like as Matt said, it just goes to the surprise team, not the best manager. But how do you really know unless you're covering that team exactly what anyone's done?
Well, you don't. I mean, you don't. You just take an educated guess. And so it's hard to know. But in any award that is true. Like, you know, unless you're watching the team every day, in and out, you know, understand behind the scenes stuff and everything, you're taking an educated guess. So, look, all I would tell you is that factoring in some of the things you say, like injuries and issues, and I thought Cash should have gotten it. If you want me to argue about it, and again, not that anyone here cares about Kevin Cash, they were trotting out an opener every third day, for crying out loud, with that team.
From the first week of the season.
I mean, it was nobody picked that team to win 90 games. They won as many games as the Cleveland Indians, for crying out loud. Cleveland won 91. Tampa Bay won 90. I didn't see that coming. Now, Oakland, I thought Oakland would be average. They ended up making the playoffs, so I'm not telling you Melvin's a bad choice. But Cora didn't have a sniff.
Okay, you offended, folks? 617-779-0985. What's the thing you read about Bryce Harper and the Red Sox?
So Jimmy linked to it last week that someone threw out the possibility that Bryce Harper, the Red Sox, could be a suitor for Bryce Harper.
Huh?
And here's why. And the logic I actually think makes sense. And look at it from this standpoint. If you are the Red Sox and you have all these contract issues coming up from, you know, Price is now out of the picture, but Chris Sale, Rick Porcello, Xander Bogaerts, eventually Mookie Betts, and Mookie's the biggest one, but J.D. Martinez can opt out after next season. You got all of these guys coming up for deals, and you've tried to sign Mookie Betts already to a long-term deal, and he won't bite. Mookie Betts has shown no willingness to sign a long-term deal yet. So how do we feel about their chances of retaining Mookie Betts if he hits the open market? And if you don't feel great about those, and I don't know that you ever could, because whenever a guy hits the market, it feels like your odds go down significantly. So if you're worried about that, why not make a preemptive strike and go out and throw a pile of money at Harper now, and that way you have leverage with Mookie going forward. And when I say leverage, I don't even mean negotiating leverage.
No, you're set.
Your talent leverage. And if it comes down to Mookie wants to stay, great. Then you have both of them. J.D. Martinez is probably out of the picture by then. Like, you get a million different ways you could go. But from a tactical talent standpoint, there's some logic to it.
So yes. You understand what it's going to take.
Yeah, probably about $350 million.
10 years, $350 million.
Something like that.
Would you do that? Would you honestly really do that?
Well, are you going to do it for Mookie?
They would, yeah.
Okay.
They are in 3 years, right?
So then, yes, I would do it.
I mean, in 3 years, it's probably going to be 10 and 400.
So, but this is my point. If Mookie's not going to take it because he's going to get it from somewhere else, then you should be willing to give Bryce Harper what you give Mookie.
I mean, why not go a step further and sign Bryce Harper and trade Mookie Betts and help replenish what you've lost here in the last couple of years with Dave Dombrowski?
Could do that, too.
How do you feel about that, Murray? How do you feel about that, stud boy over there? Nice shades. I like those.
Oh, thank you.
Those are good.
Yeah, a little bit of an upgrade. I don't know. Is Harper really an upgrade, though, between him and Betts? What are his postseason numbers?
Wait a minute. I thought you were way down on Betts.
No,
then, Murray.
I would, again, Betts I'm not down on unless you could move him for someone like maybe Noah Syndergaard or Jacob deGrom with the Mets. You
know, what about moving him straight up for Bryce Harper? Just treat it like
No.
You, in this scenario, you're trading Mookie Betts for Bryce Harper and prospects.
Yes, I would do it.
If we're getting prospects, sure.
I mean, treat it like that. No, what I mean is you're getting prospects for Betts and you're signing Harper.
Yes, I would do it.
Then I would do it, yeah.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I absolutely would. And now do I, you know, whether or not they would, I have no idea. I can't go down that road.
But you know there's no way they will.
So all I'm telling you, though, is that the Mookie Betts contract thing is a problem. And now I sound like the guy who called the show 2 weeks ago. Mookie Betts is a problem.
Well, he is in 3 years.
Yeah.
Does he have two left or three?
I think he's got, I want to say it's two more after this, but I'll check. So.
2 years after this?
Well, I'm counting 2019. I think he's up at the end of 2020, but I might be wrong.
So he's got 2 years.
Might be 2021. Right. I say after this, I'm still counting 2018 as this season. Obviously.
That's over.
Yeah, I need to turn the page on that one, I guess. Thankfully.
UFA in 2021.
So he's got 3 years left.
Oh, so he's got three left. Okay, so he's got three more. So look, I'm okay. If you want to wait it out, you can wait it out. I'm just telling you that I think in 3 years, the chances are increasing every day that Mookie's gone. They've tried to sign him, and he won't sign.
Okay, so there's Harper, Cora, and then some pace of play stuff. Because there's ownership meetings, there's GM meetings. This is the height of the baseball offseason, and Rob Manfred has threatened to install the pitch clock. Looks like he wants to install the pitch clock, but reading from Jason Stark in The Athletic, he still doesn't want to force anything on the players. And the players obviously don't want it. So what's the middle ground? What is Manfred's compromise solution on the pitch clock. He does not. He has the right to unilaterally install the clock next year and force it down the players' throats, but he doesn't have the appetite to do it. Again, according to someone close to Manfred or someone close to the commissioner's office in the Stark story, quote, Rob doesn't want to implement anything, said one of those people. He wants to find a way to come to an agreement, end quote. So he wants a compromise. What's the compromise? And as laid out by Stark and one longtime executive, they're going to make the pitch clock be a number that's not going to impact anyone. In other words, the pitch clock in the minor leagues, the pitch clock they've talked about for years is 20 seconds. 20 seconds between pitches, 20. The slowest pitchers in Major League Baseball, of which David Price is right there, average around 27 seconds between pitches. So their idea to start is to have a 30-second pitch clock. So put these guys on a clock that they're all beating in the first place, which at first glance makes you want to retch. So you're just putting a clock up there, but you're not asking David Price to throw any quicker. How do you feel about that?
Hate it. I mean, to me, if you're going to put the clock in, you got to go. If you told me 25, I might listen. We're going to affect a small number of players initially, and then we'll go at time. We'll see how it goes. We'll go after the biggest perpetrators in the game in terms of slowness.
So
Jason, 30 seconds? What's the point?
As Jason Stark wrote, even a 25-second clock, one executive estimated, would have affected no pitchers who worked more than 30 innings this season and no hitters who got more than 200 plate appearances, assuming that the clock wouldn't start until the pitcher has the ball on the mound. With runners on base, it would have impacted a handful of these pitchers. But a 30-second clock would take care of that. So that's my prediction, says one longtime executive. There will be an agreement on a pitch clock that won't impact anybody. Then they can say, we've reached an agreement on a clock. And everyone agrees that's an issue. But the truth is, it won't impact anyone. So of course, at first glance, you hate it. Of course, like I do. Yeah, I think that is the number one issue with all the things we talked about with pace of play and the length of these games and all of it. The number one is the drag between pitches. It's the number one thing that stands out to me. And the number one thing that has to be addressed, the grind of 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, foul ball, come out to the mound, change the sign, 2-2, 3-2, foul ball, 3-2. I mean, that is just, that's it to me. They have to address that. So I hate the thought of putting a clock on these guys that doesn't make them speed up. Like who would like that? And then I say to myself, well, I'm also a pragmatist. I'm also ultimately, Maz, someone who compromises and knows that that's what life is. And you start with that and you start with compromises. And if my choice is between a 30-second clock and nothing, put the clock up there and start with 30. And then next year go to 25. And then the next year go to 20. Slowly, if you don't have the stones, Manfred, to stand up to the players and just do what's best for the game, and you need baby steps, then fine, let's take baby steps.
He won't unilaterally impose the clock. He already had the chance to do that, and he passed on it.
Start with 30, because the players will agree to it. It doesn't affect any pitcher. Again, the slowest pitchers in 2018, according to Jason Stark, Vince Velasquez, who I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, Vincent Velasquez, yeah.
27.6 seconds. Verlander second at 27 seconds. Tanaka in New York is 27 seconds. David Price is 26.9. If you institute a 30-second pitch clock, all the slowest guys are still going to be under. So again, it's not really going to help anything except there's the clock on the field and you've got the ball rolling. Now you've got your foot in the door. And if that's what it takes, fine. Baby steps. I'll take it. I'm for baby steps.
So look, I mean, do I think that that's what's going to happen? Probably. Yeah, probably. I still would like to see something more aggressive. And then, you know, they have 20 seconds in the minor leagues and they can't do 25 in the big leagues.
It's embarrassing.
They can't do 25?
It's an embarrassment to the players. So, an embarrassment.
So now these are average times, obviously, that you're talking about that you just read off. So there are probably occasions where David Price is actually longer than 30.
And I guarantee you these are regular season numbers and the playoffs is where it matters. And it's so much worse. It's so much worse in the postseason. And those are the games. Those are the only ones I care about. Like, I'm done. I don't care. Do what you want in the regular season because I don't have to tune in. I'm not going to tune in. I'm just not going to do it. Right? So I can take your leave you in the regular season. Take your time, David. Asshats. Seriously. Do whatever you got to do. But then in the postseason, I want to watch. We all want to watch. We're hung on every pitch. We have to watch. And that to me is where it's more important than anywhere in the postseason. But it feels like a half measure here, which I'll take at this point. It's better than no measure. So those are your baseball items on the table, I promise, right to you right after this.
Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
During the season, I will tell you, if you were going to start probably the night before or 2 days before, in October, we did it for the first few days, but then after that, it really didn't matter. I didn't have to text them. I didn't have to call them because they didn't care. They just wanted to show up, help everybody out, and win ball games. And think about it. The New York Yankees, yeah, the sky was falling. You know, we lost game two, and he was panicking here. Everybody was like, whoa, it's over. We scored 16 at Yankee Stadium. Suck on it.
Manager of the year, suck on it.
We scored 16 at Yankee Stadium. Suck on it.
Suck on it, Mass. You don't think he's the manager of the year?
He's not.
Your thoughts, manager of the year, Bryce Harper to the Red Sox?
And that's a fact, by the way. He's not the manager of the year.
Maz would actually do that, and then these pace of play things. Baseball hour to start off today's show. So Alan in Florida is up first. Hi, Alan.
Hello, gentlemen. Give me a couple of minutes because you probably won't hear from me until April.
Good.
Number one, I'm sure you Maz, more ridiculous today than you always are. So, you know, first of all, you're talking about good luck. Who cares about the manager of the year?
Not
of course,
me.
He should have gotten it number one because Oakland, you've got the losing franchise with Billy Bean, who thinks more of himself than anybody else. He likes to trade.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, you know, he's coaching for a team. He's managing for a team with no pressure, no fan base. And the great Kevin Cash, you think he could do that in New York or L.A. or Chicago? Come on, man. You think about it. In Tampa, they don't even know the Rays are playing unless the Red Sox.
What's that got to do with it?
What does it have
he's
to
saying
do
no,
with it?
He's saying,
you can manage. He couldn't.
Right,
couldn't
he's saying no pressure on Cash, one. And then the Melvin thing. Billy Bean's a media darling. Don't deny that.
So what's the job of him?
Oh, don't deny that. What does he ever? He's never won a playoff.
No, Alan, I'm with you. I'm telling Maz that Melvin gets that Billy Bean rub off.
Right, but so no, he does. He doesn't get any rub off from Billy Bean.
I think he does.
So wait, how come he doesn't get it in other years?
Because I think that
it's about the team overachieving. That's what
how
it
many
is.
World Series is a great Melvin won, Maz. And anyway,
Alan, it's a regular season award. The manager of the year is a regular season award.
Oh, thank you. I realize that.
So listen, Cora absolutely was a candidate for the award.
Right. Let me get to my other point about Cora. You're willing, I mean, Murray, talking about DeGrom or Syndergaard, both ready for Tommy John any day now. Yeah, I'd trade Mookie Betts for both of them. Oh, absolutely. For a starting pitcher, trade the second best player in baseball. No question about it. And he's so much better than Harper, it isn't even funny. But they've got 3 years, and Cora, these players love Cora. So you don't think in the next few years, the rapport Cora has with Mookie Betts and some of these other players, that they will be able to sign him? Give me a break. It's totally ridiculous. You're talking about trading a guy that got...
Oops, sorry, Alan. So you think you'll be able to afford all those guys?
I didn't say all of them, but they're going to have to favor the second best player in baseball.
Okay, pick and choose. They're going to have to pick and choose. There's no question about it.
If you told me Mookie would sign, I'd sign him. And to me, the issue isn't about...
Would you rather have Mookie Betts or Bryce Harper?
Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts, but I don't know if he wants to be here.
Okay.
So this is what the issue is. It's not an issue with a guy's ability. I think Mookie's a more complete player than Bryce Harper.
Okay. On the Melvin thing, Maz, the whole Oakland A's thing is overrated by the media. They've made books. Brad Pitt played him in a movie, and the guy's never won a World Series. The whole thing is glorified. So anytime the A's do well, Bean gets more yank than he should. His manager gets more yank than he should. This is Melvin's second Manager of the Year award in Oakland. So it's like, As soon as Oakland wins a few games, a few more games than people think they are, it's like, oh, look at the genius of the Oakland A's. So don't tell me Melvin doesn't benefit from that.
Okay, then maybe he benefits relative to Kevin Cash. Does he benefit over Cora with
yeah,
that?
Sure, absolutely.
Why, the Red Sox don't get any yank?
I'm just telling you about not like the Billy Bean thing.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it has more to do with the payroll of the Oakland A's than it does with Billy Bean.
Absolutely part of it. Absolutely part
of it. It's the biggest part of it.
I mean, it's all tied together because Billy Bean's brilliance is Moneyball. It's tied into what he does with low payrolls.
Okay, but they deserve credit for that.
They do, but that doesn't mean that Bob Melvin's a better manager. It's just a perception thing that he benefits from.
I didn't say he was a better manager. I said he was the manager of the year. The award typically goes to the most surprising team in the league.
So
I told you I'd have given it to Tampa.
And then who would have been second?
Probably Melvin. Yeah. Why, you don't think that the Oakland A's got more out of their talent this year in the regular season than the Red Sox did?
You could probably say that.
They did.
They were one and done. They were one and done.
Okay, but this
comes... It's a regular season award. You're right. Okay, but regular season award.
So this comes back... Look, I'm sorry. I know this goes against the Red Sox because of their payroll.
I'm just telling
you... But the payroll's a huge factor in that.
This is back to the Atlanta Braves manager. I don't know. I don't know what Melvin did. I don't know. I know that the A's benefit from this mystique. They do. And it's not fair. You're not getting votes on merit. I'm just telling you, voters gravitate towards the Billy Bean Oakland A's story. They have for years.
Yeah, I think they gravitate towards the low payroll when it comes to this award. I think that this award typically goes to an overachieving team. The A's have often been an overachieving team. And look, I'm no Billy Bean fan because I think the whole Moneyball thing is wildly overrated. I'd have given it to Kevin Cash. But the award, and look, I'm not telling you I think that it's right. Does this mean Melvin's the best manager in the league? No, of course not. But the award goes typically to the manager who has the most surprising team.
Scott, New Hampshire, your thoughts.
Hey, Thugger Mass, hey, what's going on? My name's Scott. Hey, first time I've called you guys. Been a little sketched out. I usually call the other shows. Anyway, we're talking about payroll versus management, and management should basically produce with the payroll they have. And we're talking Oakland, less payroll, almost as many wins, kind of didn't win the World Series type of thing. Is that kind of where we're going with this?
Yeah, Scott, what's your point?
All right, my point is, can I correlate it to the Celtics for real quick?
No, Scott, I'm sorry. That just took a little too long to get there. I'm sorry. Try again. Come up with a point and then call us back with it and get to it. Jeff in the car. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, guys. How's it going? So my point on the Bob Melvin thing is pretty simple. He had a losing record against quality teams.
Okay, you're breaking up. Melvin had a losing record against quality teams.
Yeah, didn't the Red Sox? I mean, didn't they against the other playoff teams?
Okay, well, I don't know where he drew the line on quality teams. But.
So, look, I mean, you can say quality teams. That's probably right. I mean, like, why quibble over that? That's probably right. It still comes down to the fact that they won 97 overall and they ended up in the postseason. So now, I'm not telling you that that I think that this is all 100% just. I'm telling you that this was predictable that it was going to go this way.
Okay, so this is my point, too. It's not just. I just think that the A's thing gets overrated. The whole A's thing has been overrated.
Sure. I would say, generally speaking, they've never won it.
I mean, right. And then they make the movie about the guy, about all his brilliant moves against the payroll and everything, and never once mentioned the starting pitching that the system handed. Like, all the whole thing has been misportrayed.
See, I think there's a love affair with Bean
right,
for some reason.
And I think the manager benefits from it.
So, and he might. But again, I think the payroll's got way more to do with it. If someone else were the general manager of the A's and they won 97 games with their payroll, the manager would still be up for manager of the year.
Probably.
Just like Kevin Cash was in Tampa. So those two, to me, were obvious candidates out of the gate based on how much the team overachieved.
You know who got two?
I'm sorry, Red Sox fans are pissed that their team has $240 million to spend. Boo-hoo-hoo. If what you have to sacrifice is the manager of the year award to have a $250 million payroll, then swallow the manager of the year award and stuff it. Good God. Like, you're going to bitch about that? You won the World Series because you had a $240 million payroll in part. Who gives a rat's ass about the manager of the year? So cry about it all you want. The other guys were going to win it. They were better candidates.
Yeah, you want to cry? 617-779-0985. Also, pace of play initiatives. I put in air quotes. Get to that after Murray's update.
You're listening to Felger and Bass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong, sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
The pitch clock, and from what I understand, you have the ability now to unilaterally implement the pitch clock. Are you going to do it next year?
We're going to have a conversation with the owners at our meeting in November about the pitch clock. You are right that we have the right to implement that clock unilaterally, and it will be at the top of our agenda in November.
Do you think we will have a pitch clock next season?
That's going to be a product of the conversation that we had with the owners, and it's really not appropriate for me to speculate on, you know, what the answer to that is. I will tell you this. I have been a fan of the clock. I think it's done a nice job for us in the minor leagues in terms of moving it along. I do think we're probably going the wrong way. I know that we're probably going a little bit the wrong direction in terms of the amount of time in between pitches.
Every pitch is so big. You know, you're not going to go out there and just rush through pitches. You know, you're taught ever since you're a little kid to be able to slow the game down, and now baseball wants to speed it up. So I don't care. I'm taking my time. I know I'm slow.
And there's the problem, the players' union. David Price, an average of 27 seconds between pitches. Average. And in the postseason, I guarantee you, it's probably closer to 40 seconds. Just brutal.
It's excruciating.
Numbers are going down. Ratings are going down. Interest is going down. Sport feels like it's dying a slow death. And the players say, screw you. I'm taking my time. Nice. Nice job, guys.
See, and this is, to me, is the problem. It's the attitude of the players. The players are never, and Price is not alone in this. Like, a lot of them feel this way. Most of them feel this way. So you got to jit down their throats. You have to jam it down their throats. Now, that said, Manfred won't. He won't, because they value the relationship with the union too much. And, you know, there's a party that they need to do business with there. I get that part of it. But at the same time, how long have we been at this now? Manfred's been the commissioner for how long?
I don't even remember. 3-4 years?
I mean, he's had the chance to unilaterally impose before. He threatened it, never did it. So, like, and meanwhile, now I know the game came back this year 4.5 minutes or whatever it was, you know, that it got a little bit faster.
That was mostly between innings.
Okay, they're celebrating the fact that it's 3 hours. They're celebrating that now. It went to 3:05 because they were so negligent. And in that Stark story you were talking about, he says that, well, you know, it's been heading this way for 3 decades. The last 10 years, it's increased 10 minutes. And before this year, it was 15. So the last 10 years is the biggest problem.
No question.
That's the biggest problem.
So owners' meetings are this week, and they're going to start talking about these things. And the consensus is a pitch clock is coming, but it's going to be at a level that's so high that it's not even going to really affect the players, and that's why they'll agree to it. Manfred wants an agreement. He doesn't want to unilaterally impose. So the only way to get an agreement is to make it such that it's not going to impact anyone. A 30-second clock. When the highest average time between pitches is now 27, the highest. And even if they go to 25 seconds, that's going to affect no pitchers, they say, who work more than 30 innings, as long as they start it when the pitcher gets the ball on the mound. So this is even though Manfred just signed a 5-year contract extension. So he's sort of secure. This is the time to do it. He should do it now, but he doesn't want to. And you know what? I'll take it. It starts here. Once you throw 30 up there, what? Just getting these a-holes, the players, to agree to that countdown there at the side of the field. Once that's there, it ain't going away, right? So, just like mound visits, it took an act of God for those players to agree to mound visits. Did anyone even notice the mound visit thing? As Stark pointed out, only one game this year did a team use all 6. Only one game this year. So, oh my God, you know, like, I remember arguing with, was it Lou or these baseball guys? Oh my God, the catchers are in danger. Like, you're going to cross them up. You're going to hurt these guys. Like, did anyone notice? Did any catchers get hurt? Did any catchers come close to getting hurt?
In fact, I like Stark's idea. If only one team reached the maximum, then you need to drop it to 5.
Only one team got to 6 all year. So they already limited mound visits. That's going to go down this year. They'll go from 6 to 5 or something like that. Another little sort of just window dressing kind of thing. But, oh, well, once you start it, once you get it implemented, you can start scaling it back then. And so I think that's important with the pitch clock. So I'll take it. I'll take it. There's all sorts of other things. Limiting pitching changes are going to talk about. Require relievers to face multiple hitters.
I like that one.
I'm going to put this on the table. Limit how many relievers can pitch in one game.
I don't like that one.
Okay. Stark says this is where things could get interesting. The average team now uses more pitchers per game, than ever before, between four and five. So most teams use between four and five pitchers per game. That's the most ever. He says, what's the answer? One proposal circulating is to limit teams to four total pitching changes and or just one mid-inning pitching change per nine-inning game, barring injuries. It's a creative idea. But would modern bullpen-loving front offices sign off on it? Obviously not. The nerds want to pull out eight guys a game.
Never happen.
Okay, so how come you don't like it?
Because I don't think it's realistic. I just don't think it's realistic. And the other thing is, so if your starters get knocked around early, you're trying to win a game, you get them out of there, and then what, you can only use two more pitchers after, three more pitchers after that the whole game? So, like, I like, it's one or the other. And by that, I mean, when you bring in a reliever, he's got to face a minimum number of batters. One pitcher for one guy, that's got to go. That's got to go. That's just ridiculous. That's micromanaging the game. And if your relievers suck and they can't face more than one batter, that's your problem. Go get another pitcher. Like, that's the way I look at it. So the changes during the game, I mean, what happens if you get into, like, you know, a 10-9 game and all of a sudden both teams are seven deep? It happens. It happens. It's rare, but it happens.
Okay, they talk about shorter between inning breaks. That's easy. They've already started to do that. That's not the problem with the game. That's not... The problem with the game is the game.
I do like those in-game commercials, though.
So that's easy. They say the split-screen commercial is the way to go, and they're going to start doing more of that. So maybe tighten up the time between innings, tighten up the time of a pitching change, and just throw up a double box with your Budweiser commercial on the right. Easy. Easy peasy. They're going to start doing that. They've done that. A crackdown on sign stealing. I think this is a big one. I think it's a big one. The paranoia on sign stealing, says one executive, is at an all-time high. So sign stealing is now a huge issue and a huge pace of play issue. I totally agree. Totally. The resetting of signs, the mound visits, the everything. It's all about because they think the guy's getting the sign. And that has helped grind this game to a halt. It's caused pitchers to hold the ball. Number one issue by far is the pitcher holding the ball. Number one. Easily. Number one. The pitcher holding the ball. And so the sign stealing, they got to figure that out. In the short term, MLB is likely to limit clubs' in-game access to center field cameras and team-operated cameras and to beef up enforcement. In the long term, there's more interest than ever in finding a way for catchers and pitchers to communicate electronically. I'm with that 100%. No hand signals at all. But that would probably require minor league experimentation. So there's almost no chance you'll be seeing it in the big leagues this year, right, Stark? Okay, but start it. In the minor leagues, give those guys earpieces and let's start to play around with it. Let's start to figure that out. An earpiece would end that nonsense. Lickety split. How did the league stop the Patriots from cheating and stealing signs? They made sure that all those defensive linebackers had the earpiece in their helmet. That's it. Story over. So do this with the pitchers and the catcher, and you eliminate all this gobbledygook between pitches.
It's an easy fix. That one should be automatic.
Okay, so that's one too. And so these are just pace of play that are important. We all know it's important. There's a whole thing about the style of the game. That's a whole nother piece. You know, shifts, what that has done to the game. And the nature of the game about the three true outcomes, strikeout, walk, home run. Like, I don't know how they legislate out strikeout pitchers. And so you get games, and I don't know what they're going to do about this, because this is the direction of the game, but you had these playoff games. Because, again, I don't care about regular season. Playoff games. That Brewers-Dodgers game that went 13 innings, that ended at 2:25 a.m., 5-hour and 15-minute game, 13 innings, featured 32 combined strikeouts,
right.
15 combined hits. And if you want to add on the walks, 9 walks, you had 41 at-bats and in a strikeout or a walk and only 15 hits. It was freaking terminal. Too many games are ending like that. All right, so get your thoughts on that. The manager of the year stuff, I promise. Write to your phones after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Bilger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
Major League Baseball put the National League Championship Series yesterday, game number 4, at 9:09 at night in the East. The game was over at 2:25 in the morning. The commissioner, I guarantee you, he was in bed. Nobody saw this game. And don't sit there and tell me, if you're Major League Baseball, that you didn't have a way around this. The Astros could have played yesterday at 3, and the Dodgers could have played at 7. It's bad enough the games are on TBS and, quote-unquote, FS1. This is the Final Four. This is championship big-time baseball. And the games are on TBS and FS1. That is a joke. And don't sit there and tell me there wasn't an alternative. There was an alternative. Come on! Everybody in baseball should be steamed about this. This is ridiculous. Why? Because of FS1? TBS? I mean, geez. I mean, they got garbage shuttles anyway. My God, what, TBS wants to have their part of the game leak into prime time so they can't start at 3 o'clock in Houston in Game 3? Nonsense! Who cares what TBS thinks? Put the game on so we all can watch it. Make it easy for us. Baseball makes it so hard to follow this. It's bad enough to run a million channels. TBS, MLB, here's a game on FS1, but stick this one game on Fox. It's your sport. It's your championship series. It's Major League Baseball at its highest level. Let us watch the game properly, all parts of the country. And I don't give a crap that TBS wants to have a little leakage into prime time so they don't want to play the Red Sox in Houston at 3. They played at 5, so they get a little prime. Who cares about TBS? Jeez, it's TBS. It's TBS. Garbage. Yeah, you think Manfred was watching this yesterday? You think Manfred, and he's a great guy. I love him. You think he told his family, honey, I can't, no, I'm sorry, I can't let the dog out. I got Brewers in the 13th inning at 2:20. He was snoring his ass off at that time. We all know it. The serious baseball fan like me got screwed. It's enough already. Stop farting around. Use your noodle. You have avenues to put the games on earlier in the day. Let us watch it earlier in the day. Give us a break. You sabotage your sport. Well, we got to get a higher rating. You're not getting a rating anyway. FS1 rating my ass. There's no rating there. Take advantage of the fan who cares. That great Mad Dog rant. Oh, and the game sucked. The game he was talking about, Brewers-Dodgers game 4. 32 strikeouts, 15 hits. 32 strikeouts and 15 hits. I don't know what they're going to do about that. Start telling pitchers to not throw strikes or strike guys out. That you're stuck with that. The shifts, they can change, and I'm all for that. Illegal defense in baseball, what's wrong with that?
They need more action in the game. I told you, I'd limit the shifts. I'd get rid of them entirely. I'd outlaw them. I wouldn't allow the shifts.
As promised, right back to your phones. Bill in Rhode Island on Pace of Play. Go.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Good. What do you got?
I know we're putting this pitch clock in, and I agree with you, Felger. I mean, if you put the pitch clock in, you can go ahead and then make the adjustments in years to come. So right. I get that. That's a great thing.
Get it on but the
what
field.
About these, what about these umpires, though, that are allowing hitters to step out of the box all the time? They're very liberal with granting these timeouts. What are they going to do about these guys? After every pitch, I got to adjust my batting gloves, even on a ball. I don't swing. I don't even move. I got to readjust myself.
Okay, so let me stop you. I hear you. I feel it starts with the pitchers. I feel the batters do that because the pitcher's holding the ball for 25, 30 seconds because, oh, by the way, if the longer you hold it, the harder you can throw the next pitch. They figured this out as well. Your velocity, which is what it's all about now, increases the longer you hold the ball. So the pitcher, to me, it all starts with the pitcher. And if you speed up the pitcher, the batter's going to have to follow suit.
I mean, the game starts with the pitcher. Like, I absolutely start there. And then I'd enforce all the rules that you're supposed to enforce. Get rid of the effing ball when you're on the mound and keep your fat ass in the batter's box when you're up at the plate. Let's go.
Luke and Haverhill, go ahead on the manager of the year. Are you offended?
No, I don't think Cora actually deserved it. I mean, they got the highest payroll in all of baseball, and plus we found out in the postseason all he does is really listen to the nerds. Like, he doesn't even really manage. He just goes with the matchups.
They all listen to the nerds. If you start holding that against managers, forget about it. They're all listening to the nerds. So that's, you know, Cora, like, this whole spin that the Red Sox guys are now putting out, that there's Coralytics, that he has this ability to sift through the data and use what's right and leave what's not to the side, or, you know, explain it to his players. I even find that all nonsense. The manager, to me, is about team attitude, comportment.
Keeping everybody pointed in the right direction.
And he did a great job of that. Boy, that
excellent.
Was a motivated group right there.
Excellent. I mean, he was great. He was terrific. I mean, if you were to ask me, you know, would I have taken any manager in the game over Cora this year? Probably not. But that's not what the Manager of the Year award is. So, like, there is what you want it to be, and there is what it actually is. And what it actually is, typically, is the award that goes to the team that overachieves the most. And that was not the Red Sox in the regular season.
Joe in Medford on the Sox payroll. What are your thoughts there, Joe?
Hey, Maz, real quick, you said the number one factor of Manager of the Year is the team's payroll. But what about, do they take into consideration players that weren't on the team, like Hanley Ramirez, Pablo Sandoval, or even players that are still on the team but didn't play for them, like Ruzney Castillo played every game in Pawtucket this year, and even Dustin Pedroia, he only played a handful of games.
Yeah, Castillo doesn't count on your payroll. Pedroia does. Hanley does. So who's 2 and 3 in payroll? I bet they have dead money too.
Well, so this is the thing. And part of the reason you are able to, you know, you can absorb that dead money. That's the point. It's like other teams can't go out and get more players when they lose guys like that.
Payroll's a factor. It's held against you when people are assessing your team, and it should. Sorry. It's just the way that it is. And, I mean, it's not a level playing field in the league. You're one of the haves, and so great. You took advantage of it. Tremendous. Not everyone does. The Mets are one of the haves, and they suck. So it's no guarantee that you have the money, but you do have the money. And when you play a team that has half your payroll and you're smart, that's a factor. I'm sorry. It just is.
And this year, like, I'm willing to bet the Red Sox fans don't even know. If you were to add the payrolls of Oakland and Tampa Bay, how much more is that than the Red Sox? I'd be curious to see.
I bet it's less.
It is less.
Wasn't Tampa's like under $50 million or something?
Combined, they were each basically a third of the Red Sox. Combined, they were $170 million. The Red Sox were $240 million. You could add a third team in there. For the Red Sox basically pay their roster three times what Oakland and two and a half times what Oakland and Tampa Bay do. And you're going to bitch that your manager didn't get the Manager of the Year award?
Bob in Tewksbury, are you going to bitch?
It's so good, Maz. First of all, thanks for having me. Great show, guys. My question is, I mean, would Cora have won Manager of the Year if the Red Sox didn't win the World Series?
No, it makes no difference. The vote's in before the playoffs even start.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, babe, there's your answer. We got answers for you.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Jimmy Stewart. Francona never won it here, right?
That's correct and also a crime.
So there you go.
I didn't ask for any editorializing there, Jimmy.
I mean, you ask Red Sox fans and they'll tell you that Francona is the best manager in club history. And they're probably right.
We are right.
Okay, like I wouldn't even argue that one.
Oh,
thank you.
Really? If you put out a Twitter poll, you want Cora or Francona? What do you think the vote is?
Right now, I'd still take Francona at his peak.
I'm not asking you. I'm asking what would the vote be?
Oh, well, today it's Cora because it's, you know, recency bias.
It would be 80-20.
Yeah, recency bias.
What if
I think it would be closer than you think.
I don't. It's yesterday's news, baby. Yesterday's news.
Recency bias.
So if we had asked it in 2013, John Farrell would have polled right next to Terry Francona?
No.
Definitely not.
I don't know. He got a lot of credit for that World Series year.
Yeah, maybe.
He brought structure to the situation. He settled everybody down after the Bobby Valentine mess. He was the perfect fit.
I mean, I couldn't even tell. Who's the last Red Sox manager to win Manager of the Year? And honestly,
was it Jimmy Williams?
It might have been. That was 20 years ago, before their payroll completely exploded, and when they didn't have more talent than everybody else. So again, I would give Red Sox fans the option, because, you know, some of us grew up and lived in that era where they didn't outspend everybody, or they didn't spend at the highest level with the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Cubs and the Giants and all those other traditional teams that have a boatload of money. Which would you rather have? The Manager of the Year and lose, or lose in the playoffs, or not have the Manager of the Year and win the World Series? I'll take choice B every single time.
Okay, we can continue to talk about this all day, and we will. Stay on the phone if we can start to mix in some Celtics thoughts next hour as well. Where does that team stand as they come off the road and get back tonight at the Garden? You'll hear, will you hear that game in 98.5 The Sports Hub? The Bruins are tonight as well, right?
The Bruins are 98.5, Celtics are 105.7.
Okay, either way, you'll hear it on the Beasley Media Group family of networks. How do we feel about the green right about now? We'll get to that right after Murray's 90-second update here. No commercials.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5
The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.